Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, I've been talking about earned media value for quite some time on this podcast. My friends at Eisenberg have just raised the bar on earned media benchmarks with their Social Index. Social Index now gives you globally earned media values across a growing list of 6 geographies for all your KPIs across the top 7 social platforms: Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can now visualize these values for deeper analysis, and they have a look back window over 2 years of historical comparisons. Social Index is updated daily. Don't get stuck with old data. Over 1,000 companies have used the Social Index to understand the ROI of their social campaigns. And if you work with a social agency, you should demand they incorporate earned media values into your reports. Get your earned media value for social content. Visit earnedmediavalues.com/Allen. Again, that's earnedmediavalues.com/ALAN.
LinkedIn presents.
For all of us, it's about predicting where the consumer is going and getting half of it right.
One of the things we want to do is create ads that don't suck.
Embracing change creates great possibility.
I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Today on the show, I've got Tom Nolan. He's the CEO of Kendra Scott and leads the billion-dollar jewelry business by balancing their day-to-day functions and strategy with the integration of the brand's core pillars of family, fashion, and philanthropy into every single customer touchpoint. In addition to serving on the board of directors, he oversees the brand's substantial growth, global expansion, and evolving retail model. Tom's got more than 2 decades of experience in brand building from a diverse range of companies, including Ralph Lauren, Condé Nast, and his own entrepreneurial endeavor, Prospect Brands. On the show today, we talk about Tom's rise from the first in his family to graduate from high school, ultimately going to college. We'll cover more of that as we get started in his desire to play 2 sports, not 1, at college, but then his rise through the sales ranks up to publisher in a media company, and then switching to fashion, joining Ralph Lauren, and then his own entrepreneurial ventures and board memberships that he sits on today. We also talk about Kendra Scott and their successful growth and the path of that they've been on, and how philanthropy is at the root of what they're doing. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tom Nolan. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about Kendra Scott. But before we do that, I hear you were quite the overachiever in college and played not 1, but 2 sports. So tell me, what did you play? I guess let's start there.
Well, the fact that you called me an overachiever in college would make my parents very happy. I definitely didn't overachieve in the classroom. But I played baseball and golf in college.
Interesting. Yeah. And I've always heard that those 2 sports are hard to play because of the swings are so different.
Yeah, well, I was a pitcher, so I didn't have to hit. So the swings they're actually counterintuitive. They work opposite against each other. But I did not hit in college. I just pitched and did hit the golf ball. So it worked out. It worked out well. The bigger struggle was they were the same season, so it was a bit challenging logistically, but it worked out great. I think it just the way that I grew up. I didn't really have much. I was the only person in my family to graduate from high school. So I had a strong work ethic from a young age. And I think just kind of parlayed itself into sports, which worked out well, and, you know, helped pay for college, which my family couldn't have done. So it worked out really nicely. I was really, really, really happy.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, from those early days at college to now, you're the CEO of Kendra Scott. Well, how'd you get your start in business, and like, where were some of the stops along the way?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey as I look back on it. Some of it was purposeful, but a lot of it, I think in life, you get lucky and fortunate, and you just try to make the most out of good opportunities. And I've been really lucky and fortunate enough to be able to do that. But like I said, I was the only person in my family to go to college, in fact, graduate high school. So unlike most people, and it's funny, I now have a freshman in college, so I share these stories with her. She doesn't appreciate my stories by and large, but this one, I think hopefully she does. Because of the way that I grew up, my dad being an electrician, I never had internships. So during my summers, if I wasn't playing sports, I'd work for contractors, roofers, and I'd do side jobs with my dad. My mom had a hot dog truck and a Good Humor ice cream route, and I would, you know, help her with that. So when I got done with college after 4 years, literally the only thing I had was a piece of paper, was my diploma. I didn't do a single internship. I didn't even know. I mean, I knew, I guess, that my roommates and teammates did that sort of thing. I just, it wasn't something that I had the ability to do.
Right.
Or even have the wherewithal to know that I needed to do it. So anyway, when I got out of college, I really struggled trying to find a job. I interviewed at, you know, dozens of places, and everybody said no, because they would look at my, I didn't have a resume, right? So I interviewed for some very strange things. And so I kind of tripped into the publishing industry. I had an interview with a guy named Jason Sparks, who worked at a publishing firm in New York City called Ziff Davis. And I grew up on Long Island, so New York City was like a natural place to work. And after, you know, I probably said to me 30 times, I interviewed with this guy, and it was about selling classified ads in the back of PC Magazine. This was in the year 2000. So technology was kind of prevalent then. And, you know, I didn't even really know what that meant. But anyway, I interviewed with this guy, Jason, and he asked me some pretty pointy questions. The most pointy question was, what are your goals? And I gave him some kind of stupid answer that, you know, a typical 22-year-old might give, who didn't really have any goals other than short-term graduating college. And I said, you know, I want to get this job and make money and just stupid things. Anyway, he threw me out of his office. And he was like, look, I don't want to hire anybody that doesn't know where they want to go and what they want to do. And it's just kind of meandering through life. And it hit home. And I got up and sheepishly was walking out of his office. I got like halfway down the hallway. I was like, oh man, I can't go home. If I go home, I'm going to be an electrician.
Right.
My dad, you know, they're going to throw me out of the house, and I'm not going to have a choice. And I was proud of my dad and what he's done and stuff, but I really didn't want to be an electrician. So I went back into Jason's office and I said, look, if I go back tonight and really think about my goals, write them down on paper and come back tomorrow, can I interview with you again? I can't lose this. And he said, yeah, whatever. And I went home and I stayed up all night and I wrote down my goals. And it was 10 years of goals I wrote down. So I had goals all the way through 10 years from 2001. And I was really thoughtful about it. And a lot of them were personal and some, you know, a lot of them were professional. And you know, I literally stayed up all night. I went back and gave Jason the list and we went through it and I got the job. And what I learned kind of back to that work ethic thing, a couple of things, and I'll kind of circle back to the goal thing in a minute.
Right.
But when I started there, I was basically in a bullpen, so to speak, of and we just made outbound call. I was just cold calling all day.
Right.
And I learned early on that I wasn't going to be the smartest person in most rooms, but I knew that I would outwork anybody because that's all I knew. Right. Mm. So we had like this scoreboard up there, and that really resonated with me, anything sports related. So like I looked at it as a scoreboard and a challenge, and like we did call volume, and you know, so-and-so would do 20 calls a day and another person would do 25. And if you worked really hard and like somebody stretched, you'd do 30. And like Jason, the guy who hired me, was like monitoring it, right? And it was outbound, we're all in cubicles and everybody that walked by saw the scoreboard. And I was like, all right, I like this. It's like a challenge. So I said to myself, I'm like, I'm going to make 100 phone calls a day. And it was three times what anybody else was doing. And I'm like, well, what else am I going to do? I'm not going to go home in my parents' basement. And I didn't really care about like going out with my colleagues at work and drinking and all that sort of thing. So I was like, I don't want to stay in this job forever. So I'm just going to work my tail off and see what happens. So Anyway, I did it. And a couple of things happened. Number one, every one of my peers started to hate me. I really am. You know, and number two, everybody above me started to notice what I was doing. And then the third thing was I was getting a lot more business, and it was just purely through work ethic. And so I quickly rose through the ranks there, really just based on determination and work ethic. And they would sit there for a little while. They moved me out to San Francisco, opened an office for them there, had a lot of success, wound up landing at Condé Nast ultimately in the publishing industry, and became a publisher at 26 years old, which is kind of crazy looking back on it now, that somebody gave me the reins of a P&L at the age of 26. And it was interesting because I worked at a magazine then called Golf World. So it was one of my passions, and turned that magazine into one of the most, you know, by percentages, most profitable businesses at Condé, and loved working for Cy Newhouse and Chuck Townsend. And at that point, it was about 10 years later in my career, this is kind of circle back to the goals. I found that goal sheet that I wrote, and I would put it up my cubicle, and I did literally every one of them, Alan.
Oh, wow.
And my first reaction wasn't like, I wasn't happy. I was pissed because I'm like, man, I should have made these things better. And if I made them better, you know, knows what I could have accomplished. But anyway, it was, so I still do it today. And I urge anytime I talk to people and students, you know, in school about, you know, how they should be thinking about things. I think it's really important to be purposeful and thoughtful about writing your goals down. So anyway, left Condé Nast after a really nice career there, and I enjoyed my time and wound up at Ralph Lauren. Spent a number of years there and learned the brand from Ralph, which was incredible. Learned the business from a guy named Roger Farah, who is equally as incredible. And then left Ralph and started my own holding company with a private equity partner called Prospect Brands, because I grew up on Prospect Place, and we owned a couple of different distressed assets. And while I was there doing, we wound up selling that business. But while I was there doing that, I got a phone call from a private equity firm in California called Norwest Capital, who had just become Kendra Scott's first institutional investor, and had an outside board seat to name. And for some reason, they called me, and I have no idea how they got my number. And I certainly had no experience in the accessories or jewelry business, but flew out, met with Kendra, hit it off immediately, hit it off with the private equity firm as immediately, and joined the board in 2013, I think it was, and have, you know, remained on the board ever since. And then 3 years after that, we did a private equity transaction with a firm called Berkshire Partners, who took the company. When I joined the board, the company was valued at $100 million. And Berkshire, 2.5 years later, pegged our market value, equity enterprise value, became $1.1 billion. So it was a 10-time improvement in the valuation of the business. And at that point, I joined in an operating role. So I've been here since then. And it's been a really remarkable, exciting, fun, rewarding ride.
It's kind of amazing. It is amazing that you went from Long Island playing sports. That was the gateway to get college, to hustling your way into a job at a place that almost kicked you out, to like rising through the ranks in publishing, then switching to fashion, I'm guessing at Ralph, and now in kind of the fashion accessories business and doing private equity as well. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting. And in addition to that, I serve on a couple of different boards. One company called Tommy John, it's an underwear company in New York, a company called Maiden, which is a cookwear company here in Austin. And then on the side, with a couple of friends, I own a little 9-hole golf course in Tennessee, and it's called Sweetens Cove. And out of that, we launched a bourbon company 3 years ago. And my partners in it are Andy Roddick and Peyton Manning and Rob Collins and Mark Rivers and Skip Bronson. So it's been really fun kind of doing that as well. But the interesting part to what you just mentioned was, I mean, I came from nothing. And when I talk to people, particularly students, I have a real passion for teaching. But when I talk to students, like, if I can accomplish this, then anybody can. And I think the interesting part is I've always done things that I knew nothing about. And so it's like, I had purposefully had to be curious and ask a lot of questions and not act like I was the smartest person in the room or have all the answers. And I think that's a really valuable skill set to have. In hindsight, I didn't do it on purpose. It's kind of the way it happened. And I'm so fortunate that I get to work for a person in Kendra who, you know, grew up very similarly to me, and, you know, her doggedness and determination, especially, you know, 21 years ago when she started this company with $500 and a dream as a single mom, things were a lot harder for, you know, they're still not where they should be for women, but 21 years ago, it was a lot harder to raise money and launch a business. Mm-hmm. You know, she's one of, think 20 female founders who's created a business worth more than $1 billion. And it's amazing. And she's done it through very similar hard work, determination, doggedness, a passion for what she does, a passion for people, a passion for the customer. And so we share, we're very like-minded in how we think about doing things the right way, doing good in the world, taking care of our customers, treating our employees the right way. And it pays a really nice dividend.
Interesting. Well, I know when you started your operating role, you actually started out as CMO or yep. something very akin to that. And now yep. you're the CEO. I interview CMOs every day. And I think the one question they keep asking is, you know, what's the perspective from the CEO of what the CMO should be doing? So I'm going to ask you, the CEO, yeah. what would you be telling the earlier version of you?
Yeah. So I started at the company as chief marketing and chief revenue officer. So I oversaw sales and marketing. And I would say the short answer to your question is to drive sales. I think right. marketing's ultimate responsibility and measure of success is, you know, you're driving traffic, which ultimately drives sales if you have a good conversion. And, you know, if you're in a business like ours, which is Omni, you know, we control 85% of our direct business between our retail business and our e-commerce business. So we do that really well. So if the marketing team is doing their job effectively and driving traffic to our stores and our website, then our team's going to do their job and convert that traffic into sales. Mm. So to me, the truest measure of marketing is, you know, is the business growing, you know, right? So I always tried to tie myself to sales. And I started as a salesperson, so that's easy for me to say because it resonated. Right. But I don't think a lot of marketing people, or maybe not enough marketing leaders, have that perspective, because where I got into trouble sometimes as in that role, the marketing function was, you know, we'd sit in board meetings and I'd go through statistics and data, and a lot of it was ambivalent, right, and ambiguous. Mm-hmm. And I think in hindsight, I could have done a better job of setting really clear KPIs of what I wanted to achieve and how we were going to achieve and how we were going to do it. And then proving once those things happened, did we achieve, did we over-index, did we under-index? And along the way, if so, how did it work? And I think I just tied it to me because it was my comfort level, was the overall health of the business and how much sales were growing and how much traffic was growing. And I was fortunate too at that point and I was still on the board. So it was easy to have that perspective, but I also was fortunate the business kept continuing to grow. So, so if the marketing team, not me, but the marketing team was doing their job really effectively and it worked.
Yeah. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It gets back to that scoreboard from your early sales days. Do you have a scoreboard and do you know how you're driving it, essentially?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's easy for me because that's just how I'm wired. So I like a challenge. I like when somebody says something. I kind of grew up a little bit with a chip on my shoulder, just kind of because of where I came from. And I think that chip has been a great motivator for me. And Kendra has the same, she's wired the same way. And I think that one of the cool things about our company is we have this like tenacious desire, not even desire, like need to win and be successful. Mm-hmm. But we do it, and she set the mark here. I mean, we do it with kindness and compassion and thoughtfulness and understanding in a way that most companies that have that burning tenacity and fire inside of them, a lot of the times those environments aren't great environments to work in. Mm-hmm. You know, they become cutthroat and it becomes all about winning. And we're like that, but we do it with, and we have fun doing it. And there's a kindness and compassion about it. And it really comes from her. And I think the fact that our company is 95% female, I think certainly adds to that. We have so many superheroes here when working moms that we've had to have flexibility all throughout the existence of the organization. So like when we got to COVID, it wasn't that hard because our company's always been flexible, right? I mean, if someone needed to go pick up a kid from school or had a sick child at home or had a spouse that needed help, like we were always understanding. So when COVID came, outside of some of the things we had not dealt with, the flexibility part of it, I think was easy for us to deal with because it's kind of been at the root of our culture from the beginning. And we didn't and you don't have to sacrifice success or sacrifice winning or sacrifice hard work to do that. You can do both.
Love it. I love it. I know kindness and compassion seem to be kind of like core values of Kendra Scott. How does your philanthropy fit into the mix of there? Because it seems like that's an important part of the company as well.
Yeah. I would say it's our most important part. We are three pillars of family, fashion, and philanthropy. And philanthropy is I would say, the pinnacle for us since Kendra started the brand in 2001. I mean, she's always said that giving back is the truest form of success. You know, it's in our DNA and we have countless examples of it. And I think the unique thing that we've done here is we really do it on a one-to-one basis. And I'll tell you just a quick story of kind of back to how I got here. But some data points for us are 2010, we've given back more than $50 million to local charities and international causes. The brand focuses on health and wellness, education, entrepreneurship, women and youth empowerment. And we just launched the Kendra Scott Foundation, which we're all really excited about. We've always kind of seen it that way, but that foundation is going to really allow us to control where funds are contributed, you know, deepening the investments and changing lives for anybody in need, but particularly women and youth. And every company now, and every company should have from the beginning, but I think every company now is focused on ESG and having some social component or give back because it's the right thing to do. I think Kendra's been doing it for 21 years, right? She put a stake in the ground very early on, and it's been a huge driver to our success so much so that, you know, last year we have 131 stores today. Last year we did 20,000 events in our retail stores, and each one of those events was driven by a philanthropic need. And it wasn't like a big organization like a Susan G. Komen or American Red Cross, and those are great organizations. We help them, but most of them were individuals, one-to-one basis. Is, you know, you have a sick family member or friend in need, like we in our local communities lean in and really make sure that we are helping people. So to bring it back, and this is, I mean, I only know what I know and what I've, we only know what we experience ourselves in life. But when I was at Ralph, we had Pink Pony Foundation. My family has always given back and volunteered, that sort of things, because it just, I've been fortunate in life that I didn't come from a lot. And I've done more than I thought was possible. So I felt like giving back is really important. And I knew that we did a lot of philanthropy here as a board member. But after we had our transaction with Berkshire, Kendra asked me to join the company. I was living in North Carolina with my family and I was not interested to move to Texas. She asked me to join the organization. I was like, no, I don't want to live in Texas. I haven't spent a lot of time there. I'm very happy here. I have four young children and, you know, we're good. And we do something called Kendra Cares, which is where we take our color bar. So in all of our stores and on our website, we were the first company in our category to have a create your own, where you could walk in and custom make jewelry for yourself and walk out with that product. So it was pretty revolutionary at the time. And it's still a core tenet to what we do. So we take a mobile version of that. We bring it to hospitals and schools and businesses, anywhere where we can go and serve others. And she had urged me to go to one of our Kendra Cares events before making my final decision on if I was going to come work here or not. I'd already made up my mind that I wasn't coming to work here, just FYI. But I was like, okay, I'll begrudgingly go. So it was at the event that we were doing. I was in New York for a board meeting for another company, and it was at Sloan Kettering's Pediatric Oncology Ward. I have four children, and I'd never been in a pediatric oncology ward. I hope to have never been one as a father. But I was not looking forward to going. And I'm like a super emotional person. Like I cry in the movies and sad commercials every time I leave my oldest daughter at Villanova and all this sort of thing. So I was not looking forward to going. I knew I was going to get sad. I didn't want to embarrass myself. I didn't want to make families uncomfortable if I kind of lost it. But so I begrudgingly went. And I remember getting in the elevator. Like I remember how it smelled. I remember the ride up and before the doors open. And I was like just dreading the sad, awful place I'm going to walk into. But before the doors open, I could hear like the bass from like bass of music, like you're at a nightclub. And the doors opened and I walked in and the reception area of Sloan Kettering's Pediatric Oncology Ward, we basically turned into like a party. And it was the happiest place in Manhattan. We had, you know, clowns and balloons. And I was at the color bar making jewelry for sick kids and their parents and their siblings and their grandparents and whoever was there. And it was like for 3 hours, we made this really sad place like the happiest place in the world. And I did keep it together. And then I walked out of the building and went across the street and called my family. And I was like, we're moving to Texas. Like, I'm gonna be able to do this, like touch people in a one-to-one way like this and really make a difference. More than just writing a check or showing up at something, it was very, very meaningful. And we do that every single day, Alan, in a way that changes people's lives. And the best part of my job is I've gotten to know so many families that need help. And you know, I've gone to customers' weddings and, unfortunately, customers' celebration of life services and funerals. Mm. Brands don't do that in an authentic way the way that we do it. And the people that we have working here in the organization have a passion for that. And, you know, whether it's Inheritance of Hope, a charity event that takes, you know, terminally ill parents and takes them on their last trip to Disney World, or what we did at Sloan Kettering that day, we also have an army of almost 3,000 people here that have a passion for that the way that Kendra does and the way that I do. And we go to work and it creates an amazing culture, and I know that we're changing lives and we're doing it the right way. And so that's why philanthropy is our most important pillar. And that's why it's so important to our company. And the bigger the business gets, the more people we can help. And, you know, I think some companies say that, but we really mean it.
I love that. I love that story. And I mean, I was going to ask, but I think the story tells it all, which is like, how does this philanthropy actually drive loyalty and affinity to the brand? But you said it in the story itself.
Yeah, we make beautiful products at an affordable price point using natural gemstones. And I subjectively think that our products are better than our competitions, right? But that's a very subjective statement. And people don't buy us. I think they come to us sometimes because they see that we make beautiful things, but they stay with us because we make a difference and we have an impact on their lives. And we have a principle here that the customer is our boss, and like, she signs our paychecks at the end of the day. And like, we make decisions based on what she needs and wants and where she is. But philanthropy is meaningful. And I think for people buy things with purpose, and the customer is smarter than they've ever been, and they can sniff out people that are disingenuous and brands that are disingenuous, and we're not. So I think that makes a big difference. And philanthropy is kind of our yellow thread that runs through everything that we do here. And if we're doing our jobs effectively, back to marketing, if marketing's doing their jobs effectively, we're telling that story so that people understand when they buy something from Kendra Scott, when they walk into one of our stores, when they go on our website, like our purpose is about doing good and making a difference. And it's not just about a transaction, it's about a connection.
Well, let's talk about marketing and how, like, what are the types of marketing campaigns or efforts that you've had most recently? And then I would love your thoughts, both as somebody that was a CMO and now as a CEO, like, what do you think makes for great marketing?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've always really focused on grassroots, local, hyper-local events. Like, we've always done that. And I think that we do it really well. Some of the bigger things that we've done that I'm really proud of and I think have connected with our customers were really interesting was Mother's Day of 2022. We did a Take the Time initiative where, and again, our constituency is predominantly female. 95% of our employees are female, but we declared Mother's Day a kind of paid holiday for all of our employees. No one's done that before. I thought that was really interesting. The marketing team kind of drove that, and clever and the right thing to do. Like, and I look back, I'm like, geez, how do we not do that? Of course, it should be a holiday. And so that was really fun. And I think what we're going to be doing this Mother's Day is going to be really exciting. And Mother's Day is, I mean, again, I think moms are superheroes in general, and I admire my own and look at the women that I work with every day that are moms, and it's just such a great gift. So we want to celebrate moms in a very specific way. We do it every year, and it's one of our Super Bowls as we get to Mother's Day to celebrate the great moms here and our customers. We've had some really amazing collaborations recently too, from Champagne to Chanel or Barbie. Barbie's a, you know, one of the most culturally relevant icons right now. Customers loved it. We sold out of things right away. We did a collaboration with the Museum of Ice Cream recently, which was a lot of fun. We targeted men last holiday season with a Buy Better Gifts campaign, which was fun. 25% of our customers are men, mostly buying gifts, but also for themselves. And I think some of us, Alan, struggle with buying thoughtful gifts. We kind of, like me, you know, you wait till the very last minute to buy gifts for somebody and then you're in like panic mode. Yeah. So we kind of poked fun at that in a really thoughtful way. And thought that was a really successful campaign. And we got to do it with our great friends at Omaha Productions, and, you know, it's Peyton Manning's company. Yeah. And so that was a nice dovetail tie into that too.
I love that. Love it. Yes. And I resemble that comment, unfortunately, for my wife. But yes. Well, what do you think? I mean, you guys, it seems like, I mean, you've got this grassroots piece. I'm reading between the lines, but you intimately know your customers at a local level. What do you think companies need to do today to stay relevant? And how do you think about making sure that Kendra Scott's always staying relevant?
Yeah. Well? I mean, there's a lot more noise these days. I mean, when I was self-classified as the magazine, like the internet was just emerging and you looked at magazines, newspapers or TV, right? So it was, when you're launching a marketing campaign, it was pretty easy how you'd buy media and then how you'd measure it, right? Today, it's changed a lot. Everything's so fragmented. Keeping people's attention span is a lot more challenging than it used to be. But I think at the end of it, it's got to come down to experience. If you have a good relationship with your customers and you understand who they are and what motivates them, and I believe that we do through the great work of our team, then it just becomes about like authentically telling your story, doing it the right way, and not trying to, I just don't think you can fool people. And I think if you're not authentic and trying to do things that are disingenuous, then people sniff that out really quickly. So I think authentic storytelling is really, really important. And then you got to have a multifaceted, multi-pronged approach of always on big brand campaigns with thoughtful targeting from an events perspective, how you're thinking about social media, how you think about halo, brand heat, but just doing it in a consistent, thoughtful, authentic way, I think is really important. And I think the brands that do that really well have had success and will continue to have success. They don't try to be something that they're not.
Where do you see Kendra Scott going in 2023 and beyond? What's next for you guys?
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of what we're going to do in the future is what we've done in the past. It's back to my point on being authentic. You know, as Kendra's life has changed and as she's grown, I mean, so has our business, right? We launched a men's line, Scott Brothers, named after her sons as they got into the business. We just launched and they got older and got interested in wearing jewelry and expressing themselves in a creative manner. We launched engagement recently, which has been really successful. We just launched a brand called Yellow Rose, as Kendra's life has expanded. But a lot of what we're doing, we have about 5% unaided brand awareness across the country. And as big as the business is, it's pretty remarkable how much upside and continued ramp that we have out there. We're just continuing to preach the gospel about who we are and letting people find out about that. But we're going to continue to roll out our new in-store experiences, new store concepts across the country. Retail is at the tip of the spear for us as it relates to customer experience. So we're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep expanding marketing collaborations and partnerships as opportunities come up that we feel like make sense for our brand and are authentic, and just trying to get out there and tell as many people who we are and the difference that we make. Because like I said, the bigger and more powerful and more aware of the brand they are, that people are, the more impact and difference we can make in people's lives.
Love it. Love it. Well, one of the things we like to do on the show is to get to know you even a little bit more than we already do. We know you have this insatiable drive that took you into playing two sports in college and going back and landing that job, the first job outside of college. But my favorite question to ask everyone on the show is, has there been an experience of your past that defines and makes up who you are today?
Yeah. I mean, there's been a million of them, Alan. I lost my sister 10 years ago. She had a brain aneurysm. So it was really sudden. And we didn't expect it, obviously. She was my only sibling. And I saw how devastating that was to my parents. I was a parent at the time. I had two of my children were born then. But I think that was a defining moment for me, for sure, because at that point in my life, I was in my early 30s and so focused and driven on my career and what I wanted to accomplish in life. And I think it sidetracked some personal relationships. And that was a wake-up call for me that life is short, right? And you never know what's going to happen. And it changed a lot of my behavior and how I treated people, but also really how I valued time. And I think when I think about the currency and that matters the most to me, it's time. It's the one asset you can't get more of. You can always make more money, you know, you can acquire more things, you can't get more time. So I think when that happened, man, it was 11 years ago now, but when that happened 11 years ago, it really kind of reset my life for me of what my priorities were and just how careful I became with my time. And my circle got smaller, people that I didn't want to waste time with. And my life really became, you know, my family became a lot more important to me. And not that they weren't before, but I just became more more diligent, disciplined about time management and focus and that sort of thing. So that for sure was a defining moment. I mean, having my children four times was a defining moment for sure.
Right.
You know, you stop living for yourself and you start living for somebody else. It's,
yeah.
I've always been a servant leader, but I think once you have kids, it really changes the definition of what being a servant is. And I think that's kind of, I hope, translated into work. I don't ever think that the employees here work for me. I feel like I work for them. So all those things have kind of shaped me. You know, you are your life, right? Like in the experience that you have. And I hope those things have made me better at my job and hopefully a better parent, partner, and those sort of things.
Love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Well, if you were starting this journey all over again, what advice would you give young Tom?
Yeah. I wouldn't change a lot about my past. I'm pleased with how things have worked out in a lot of ways. Probably I would have told myself to like invest in Tesla when they launched. That was probably one thing. But no, seriously, it would have been the time thing. Don't waste time with people on things that aren't important. And I look back in when I was younger, my 20s, 30s, I think it's just natural. You got to find your way. But I wasted a lot of time on things that, looking back now, just weren't important. So I think that's that time is the most important thing, you know. So I it would be about that. Just don't waste time.
Well, is there a topic that either you're trying to learn more about or you think marketers need to be learning more about?
I think that the marketing world, when I sit in, you know, whether it's in marketing meetings here or board meetings for other companies, I think that the marketing world has gotten so reliant upon, in a good way and a bad way, data and analytics. I think it's really important. But like, you got to get out in the field and see and talk to your customers. Mm. I think too many times, especially at a high level, CMOs maybe just are managing down versus like getting out in the field and just picking up the heartbeat of your customers and listening to them and talking to them and walking a couple steps in their shoes to see how they're seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great reminder for us. We always look at things through the lens of a customer and the eyes of a customer. And I think if marketers put down the paper sometimes and just got out and spent time with their customers instead of looking at their customers on a piece of paper, it would probably be more impactful.
I 100% agree with that. We've come over reliant, I think, because data is readily available or more readily available.
It's so become, it's really valuable, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff, but it's become a crutch, I think, to some. And I mean, look, the whole world is dealing with the massive inefficiencies of marketing on social media right now. And, you know, those things aren't going to get any easier. And I think for the marketing leaders that don't really like deeply understand and know and love their customer, and look at things through their eyes, like it's just their jobs are going to continue. You know, it's not going to get easier, but it's going to, that compounds how difficult it is.
Well, on a personal level, are there brands or companies or causes that you follow or you think other people should take notice of?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that the charity, the cause that I care a lot about right now, and it's a institution that we sponsor here. I mean, I love the Kendra Scott Foundation, obviously. I think, you know, that allows us as a platform to disseminate funds and resources to a lot of different causes. So there's not one specifically there. I would say we do some work with Inheritance of Hope, and that's been one that's been near and dear to me. I referenced it earlier, but it's an organization started by Kristen and Derek Milligan. Derek's become a good friend, and we've been partners there for a long time. And I'm fortunate enough to volunteer every year with my youngest daughter, Cameron, and we go and serve families that have a terminally ill parent. And, you know, we've gotten to know the kids and the spouses. And so I'm passionate about that. I think that the brands that I really admire, I mean, I'll always admire Ralph because I loved working there, and I love Ralph, the person, and what they've done and where he came from. I mean, his dad painted murals inside of apartment buildings, and he started making ties, and he's turned it into he's the American icon, and he's a wonderful being. So I love what they do. I was recently, actually earlier today, talking to Davis Smith, who's the founder of Cotopaxi. I love that brand. I love how mission-driven it is. I love how unique the product is. I love what Joe is doing and has done at Vuori. I really admire that brand as well. And I'm an apparel guy, so I'll pick apparel brands. But yeah, I think that all those companies are really cool. And I love, you know, I serve on the brand of on the board of Maiden, which is a company here. I admire what they're doing here, and I love that category. And then Tommy John is another company that I serve on. I also admire what Tom and Aaron have built.
No, I hear you. And I've had, Davis has been on the show before as well at Cotopaxi. And it's a one I bring up a lot of times in conversations with people that start talking about purpose and how that influences how they go to market. And
it's amazing. I'm really, and getting to know him better, I feel even more strongly about the brand. I love what they're building and how he's doing it and the team he's put around them. And, you know, the product's fantastic and it's a great story.
I 100% agree. And it literally is woven is the pun, I guess, woven into every single thing that they do. Like the last time I talked to him, it's been a number of years, but it feels like every single aspect of the business lives and breathes their purpose.
I mean, it goes back to authenticity. He's an authentic person. I mean, he's leaving in June to go on a mission for 3 years with family, you know, and whole life is about serving others. And he's built a brand around that. And you can tell, you can't fake that, right? So I think it's a big ingredient in what makes his business successful. I mean, you got to have great product, obviously, which he does. But I think it's a great foundation.
Awesome. Well, last question for you: what do you think is the largest opportunity or threat facing marketers today?
Yeah, back to what I said earlier. I don't think enough marketers really know their customer, and they see it. They know them on a piece of paper. You got to know your customer. You have to love them, right? They may not be a reflection of who you are as an individual, but you have to love them. And you really got to look at things through their eyes. And I think if you do, you can see just intuitively what your brand is doing well and not doing well. And I think if too many people rely on what's in front of them on a piece of paper and not who's in front of them in a store, they're doing a disservice to their customer and ultimately their company.
Well, Tom, it's been a fantastic conversation. I've learned a ton. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's fun.
Hi, it's Alan again. Marketing Today was created and produced by me with post-production support from Sam Robertson. If you're new to Marketing Today, please feel free to write us a review on iTunes or your favorite listening platform. Don't forget to subscribe on marketingtodaypodcast.com. Tell your friends and colleagues about the show. I love hearing from listeners. You can contact me at marketingtodaypodcast.com. There you'll also find complete show notes and links to what was discussed in the episode today, and you can search our archives. I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.